top-level guy. And you got Kevin Rice, who a few people are projecting to be an early first-round pick now after a bit. So Syracuse, Cornell's a lot of guys too, but Syracuse and Brendan. I want to get your thoughts a bit on this too.
The Syracuse guys, you see a lot of defenders coming out of Syracuse. There's defenders up there are born and bred. Matt Harris last year, Brian McGill the year before, Joel White, John Lade. All four of those guys are playing in the pros. So it's not surprising to see defenders from Syracuse go out. Offensively, they've had a lull in a sense since the time to Joe Marasco and the Lavelle and all those guys. But I wouldn't be surprised to see the defenders go out of Syracuse tonight.
Yeah, I want to hit on if anyone have any thoughts on Hakeem Lucky, because you've seen him in some draft rankings now. I think he's very underrated. I think he could actually be a sleeper pick for any team. So anyone have anything to say on him?
I'm actually going to go with Schoonmaker being the sleeper as opposed to Lucky. Just a more well-rounded game, can play defense. Lucky, if he doesn't produce in the first month of the season, people are going to lose him. And I think he'll be one of those guys that you see drafted. Could be high, but then he never materializes later.
There's a lot of better players on the board. Just drafting a second midfield, a guy that's been a producer, a second midfield line guy for the last 2 years. It's definitely not worth a first, second, or third.
No, I got him
pick.
At like a third round guy.
I just think that there are other players out there. And then just touching again, I really like Kevin Rice as an ex-attackman in this league, a guy that can initiate and also finish inside. Randy Stats with the knee is always going to be a question. Where he's going to go. Is he going to be in the first round? He's definitely a first round talent, but that knee history is definitely a question mark on my end.
Another question mark with Stats and a couple other guys like Burry, Dan Taylor out of Lehigh too, who I also like as a sleeper. A lot of Canadian prospects who have some box lacrosse commitments, and that's something I think that has to be put into consideration as well, because the MLL season is starting April 12th this season, and I believe that's the earliest it's ever started. And NLL season runs well into June now with their playoff format. So do you think we see some of these Canadian indoor players maybe drafted a little undervalued because of this?
That's a good question. Dan Taylor is my sleeper of the draft. Watching him up at Lehigh, he's a big producer. He was one of their biggest threats on the field last year, him and Matt Smith. That's what we've seen last year. With the NLL season running over, I think they may be taking a little lighter. Cody Jameson, hardly showed up last year, if at all. And a bunch of the box players are kind of focusing more on the box nowadays than they are on the out on the field. You see Kevin Crowley, Steve Olmes, those guys, they're indoor and outdoor both, which is fantastic, which I'm really hoping stays. Momentum stays like that, and I really hope Dan Taylor gets taken high.
Oh yeah, I think Taylor could actually be one of the higher picks. I actually did a prospect profile on him a couple weeks back, and we have Justin LaFleur on staff too, who worked for Lehigh. We talked to a lot of Lehigh guys, and Taylor, Matt Poilon as well, their goalie, could be. I think he's a top goalie in the draft, but Taylor is a guy I think a lot of people are overlooking, maybe because of the box background. But now it gets interesting, because a guy like Berg, he's going to be a second or third overall pick in the NLL as well. Is that a reason he could drop? I've seen some mock drafts where he's out of the first round.
Well, I think more of it has to do with his availability, but in terms of him being from Denver and also a Canadian guy, the team on the East Coast can be wary about having him come across the country every single game, right? Because they're going to be traveling. You assume he lives around there or comes from Canada every day. He's not going to be flying back and forth, especially with the salaries these guys make. That's why, you see a Chesapeake team, they take guys all from Maryland area. They take guys from Pennsylvania, all that. Those areas, and you saw, Charlotte, those guys are like team ACC/Loyola, because they draft everyone around that area.
Charlotte just takes all the Loyola guys. That's why I think they might go with Nico Pontrello at that third overall pick. I don't have him there necessarily, but I've seen a lot of people who think he will go there just because of the Loyola connection.
Yeah, I don't think Pontrello, he shouldn't be in the top. He'd be lucky to be a late second round. I would say third. I would draft him even as late third round. He's just not, the system and the talent. I mean, the Patriot League is good, but the talent there to play in the pros is obviously not the same caliber, not the same speed. Loyola is good. They do make a run, but if you look at the waning parts of last year, where was he in the Albany game? And that will show you a lot about the up-tempo style, which they can and can't do. It has to be more of a, he has to be there all the time.
Another interesting dynamic of the draft, I think, I mean, you got Lyle Thompson. I think everyone considers him the first-round pick, or first overall pick. But Florida has two picks, first and second. Do they look to move one of those picks, possibly? And if so, what could they get out of that?
I don't think they're gonna move off those picks. I just think that they're in a unique position having the first two picks overall. You could get a stud, change your franchise type player in Lyle Thompson, and then your second pick you could get a very strong midfielder. I think they're pretty much set at attack with Powell and McCardell and now Thompson, and then find yourself another midfielder that could definitely. Change the dynamics of their offense. But also, you could also see them trading number two and moving back and maybe picking up a couple more picks. This isn't a draft that's very top-heavy with stars. I think there's some really good middle-of-the-road 3 to 5 year players. And, because of the season starting early, these guys are going to start, their MLL careers in June.
Yeah, that's another thing that's kind of interesting. These guys won't have an impact until late. And that's kind of the case every year, but MLL is moving your season up. Your championship game moved up to earlier August because they don't want to interfere with football, I guess, has always been their logic. Runs into NLL season, which is another can of worms completely. But another interesting aspect of the draft is the face-off guys. You're some serious face-off talent in this draft. You have Charlie Raffa, Kevin Massa, who they actually had the same exact face-off percent at 68% last season, which is interesting, but I think a few people have Rafa higher because he's out of Maryland, but what do you guys think about which faceoff guy goes first? Because they're both kind of considered early second rounders.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at both of them, you want to see head-to-head, right? Because a lot of the time, a lot of these guys never face off against each other, but we got to see in the quarterfinal game, Rafa went against Massa and Rafa dominated him. But then he limped off the field with a bum knee that really hampered him in the next game. And that's going to be huge for his MLL stock because guys are going to look at his knee and look at all these injuries he's accumulating and say, he's great, but can he stay healthy? I mean, the guy was literally crawling, like, it looked like he needed a gurney to get off the field. That's how bad he was, but he's so good. And Massa's great, but he did suffer against better competition. One guy I really like is Joseph Nardella of Rutgers. Dude puts up insane stats and generates all transition offense for them, but he's undervalued because he plays at Rutgers. And Rutgers,
you don't see any guy that at Rutgers.
Andy was hurt part of the year, so that's okay. Why his mid-season, he was out, I believe, three to five games, so that's why he just disappeared from the mainstream media for it.
The question of the day, like Andrew brought up, was the knee for Rafa is definitely going to be an issue for a lot of these GMs in this league. And, because you're drafting in January instead of drafting in June, there's going to be a lot of question marks on Rafa's status. I'm also concerned about a lot of these players that face off in college on one knee and how that translates into players that play Major League Lacrosse. I will agree with Andrew that Nardella could definitely be a sleeper pick at faceoff. He brings some value in that third, fourth, fifth round for teams that need faceoff help.
Let's see. Rafa over here saying something.
I'm looking at local product Nick Saputo from Drexel. You look at his stats, other than Kevin Massa, obviously, with 443 faceoffs taken, Saputo took 411, won 255, only 50 less than Massa. I watched Saputo play in just regular conference games for Drexel and then watched him against Penn. And anybody that watched that game saw him notch two goals within 11 seconds, winning the faceoff, going down.
Almost, he had 6 goals overall in that game.
Yeah, typical of a Jeff Snyder type of play, winning the faceoff and going right down. And he has a cannon for a shot. The kid is strong. He's quick. He could be a major sleeper as far as a team that would need somebody for the faceoff. Another sleeper I was looking at would be on the forward, also from Drexel, Ryan Belkin.
He's an interesting name. I haven't really seen much about his draft stock, so explain why he would be a good pick.
He played along with the NLL's number one overall pick, Ben McIntosh. They played together perfectly, just like McIntosh and Robert Church played together when Church was at Drexel. Belka is coming from that same form, that same mold. He could be a sleeper if paired with the right teammate, right line combination. Ryan Belka can be a force in, I mean, he's not going to be your Paul Rabel in the league, obviously, but he can be a force for a team and be a huge sleeper at the forward position.
You mentioned Paul Rabel now, too. Makes me want to talk a little bit about that trade, just because we're all here and get opinions on that. I mean, there's been plenty of coverage about it, but specifically, how does this affect what the Cannons are doing? Because they stocked up on draft picks. They're going to look a lot different next year. They have Max Seabold, but a lot of that offense is going to run through Will Manny now, too, because he really stepped up his game last year. But he's going to be running a lot of that attack unit with Ryan Boyle retired. But what kind of approach are the Cannons going to take in this draft? They've already traded for a goalie, which is kind of interesting. They have Jordan Burke playing, of course. Their defense is pretty stocked. They have Brody Merrill, but Kyle Sweeney did retire. When I spoke to Kevin Barney, the Cannons GM, right after the trade, he explained to me they're just looking to the next couple of years kind of change their look, change what you're doing. Rabel's gone now. He was the entire face of that team. Matt Hoskey is probably not coming back either. So how are the Cannons going to look on offense, and what are they going to do in this draft other than probably obviously taking Ryan Tucker?
Well, my sleeper actually is going to go to the Cannons and Bobby Schmidt, the long pull from Bellarmine. I know Coach Tucker has seen him a few times this summer. It's interesting because he plays at Bellarmine, but the competition that he plays with the rest of the year has been significant, and he's played a lot against the best. So I know the Cannons are high on him. I'd expect him to take him 6 or 7, and he will play for him. He'll play for him right away. I think he's going to be the sleeper in the draft.
I like Ryan Walsh as my sleeper for tonight's draft. A big target out of Colgate. Long Island-based guy. I like him possibly going to New York in the first, second round. I think it'd be a great fit for New York. They definitely need a left-handed attackman and a big target. Another player that you have to keep an eye out for New York as well, me being a homer, is Joe Sankey from North Carolina. Also fits the mold for what New York's needs are as a left-handed attackman.
How many good players in North Carolina have been coming out, by the way? You have Joey Sankey, Jimmy Bitter, and Chad Tutton. Tutton's another guy who might be playing the indoor game, which could be another problem, but North Carolina has some solid players coming out.
Yeah, I mean, they've always had the talent. They've always had Final Four National Championship talent. It's just the fact that Joe Bresci and company just crapped the bed all of a sudden come tournament time, and the fact that they keep getting paired up with Denver every single year, which is
Denver,
totally unoriginal in NCAA tournament selection committee, which I won't get into, but I've been pissed about because they really need to change up things. But honestly, they've always had the talent. Jimmy Bitter was one of the top prospects, and obviously his brother was one of the best players at UNC. Really quickly, though, just going back to the Cannons, for me, I think the Cannons have to go with the midfielder with either one or both of their picks because their attack's pretty much set. Their defense is very solid all around, and goalie's solid as well. So I think they really need to address the midfield and kind of get a lot of pieces to contribute to replace Paul Rabel instead of one guy to just add.
Brendan, any other thoughts on that, too?
Just to go back to New York, Chamber was saying. You know, I talked to Spallina the other day, and he was talking about how Joey Senecki is an ideal player to be drafted by Long Island due to the fact that Ned Frye is so dominant around the field anywhere he goes. I mean, you see Joey Senecki is a left-handed, you know, left-handed attack, and he's small, quick, and he makes defenders, you know, look goofy, if you will. So, I mean, you think about it, you have JoJo Marasco, you've got Paul Rabel, Ned Crotty in the midfield, then you got Pinnell, you've got Palasek, and then you've got Sankey. Like, it's hard to decide who you're going to put the four holes on with an offense of that caliber.
So we're going to start our guests out tonight. We have Joe Keegan from Laxter coming on over here, former in-Lax writer, one of the better writers in the game overall, one of the more knowledgeable writers in the game. So, Joe, welcome to MLL Free Draft Live.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Love to have you. Always check out Joe's columns. He has some good stuff going on. He has the MLL trade value stuff, like Bill Simmons over on Grantland with NBA, which I saw started today and made me think of the MLL trade series. So, first question I have for you is, Lyle Thompson has to be number one pick, right?
Yeah, he definitely has to be number one. He's by far the best player in this draft. It's just a matter of where he goes. And I think if you look at all the possible destinations, a few stick out. A lot of people are obviously mentioning Florida because they do have the number one pick. Some people are mentioning Rochester, that they can trade for him because they do have his brother, Miles Thompson. I'm not sure that's going to happen because they do have Jordan Wolf there, and they don't really want to part ways with him. So taking on Lyle Thompson with the attack unit that they already have, I mean, they made the championship last year. They were a goal away from sending it to overtime. I just don't know if you really mess with that offense. They got Jordan Wolf flanked by a righty finisher, a lefty finisher. They get a great midfield that runs four deep with McIntosh, Rannigan, Lawson, and Turi. I just don't really think you mess with that team. I think one destination that hasn't really been popping up so much, but could be a great fit if they want to go and trade up, package some players' picks together to go get it, would be Boston, because they did just lose Paul Rabel. So from an on-field perspective and from a marketing perspective, he can put fans in the seats. Obviously, we're not sure yet how many fans Boston's going to lose per game. They usually get about 8,000 fans per game, 7,000-8,000, right up there with Denver. We'll see what the drop-off is this year. I mean, they're moving to Gillette, so
Gillette's going to help that attendance, I think. I think that's going to interest a lot of people. So thinking about a candidate, I think that's interesting. What do you think the Cannons would give up in that kind of trade? And also, I don't think Florida has the first and second picks. I find it hard to believe they keep both of them. So if Florida is to give up one of them, what kind of players do you think they would require?
Right. Well, you know, Coach Ross loves guys who can come in and play right now. Guys that, I mean, are going to make an immediate impact, not box players. I would say that an obvious fit would be at defense. Florida is a little thin there, and Boston definitely has a lot of depth. They just brought on Chad Wiedmeyer, and Ricky Pages is coming back from injury on top of, I mean, they have so many poles that they give a short stick to their long poles. So just to get them on the field. I think they could trade a defender to Florida. I'm not sure that itself would do it for a guy like Lyle Thompson. They probably would need to send some future picks, but we know they have plenty of those.
One thing we were talking about earlier, the draft stock of Westberg, because I think he has the talent to be a second or third overall pick, but in fact, he's playing a Canadian box. He's going to be a top pick in the NLL. He's coming out from Denver. I doubt Florida takes him number two, even though he might be ranked right there. So what do you think the future of Berg? I've seen some people here think he's going to drop out of the first round, and I've seen a few other people say that too.
Yeah, it's a tough call with all those box guys, Jesse King, Chad Tutton. The more I think about it, really the farther they're going to slip, because if you look at like all eight rosters, what teams really need stud guys that are going to very 3 goals a game, you know. But most of these teams are really looking for role players, which Berg can certainly be, just as a righty finisher, goal scorer. He can be that, but, I mean, there are plenty of guys in this draft, like Will Haas and Jack Neer, who can come in and make an impact, which is a position, short stick D-Middy is a position of need for more teams. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Berg fall out of the first round, but like you said, he's probably a second-best talent in this draft.
I like Jesse King a lot, and I think Ohio would be a good fit naturally, but they have so many set scorers there. They're ridiculous. They're so young. They're so fast. They have so much scoring. I don't know if there's enough ball to go around over there anymore.
That's tough. He is an Ohio State guy, so it does seem like a fit, but that's another offense that you just wonder how much you really want to mess with it. If he falls, Ohio's not picking in the first round. Their first pick is... I'm not sure.
It's a while. They're not until the fifth round.
No, that went to Boston. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that trade. It just happened with the Wiedemeyer trade. They ended up doing a loss there.
If he falls to Ohio, I could see them taking him. I mean, like you said, it's a good fit, but that midfield is loaded. And I'd like to see a full year of Tom Schreiber on that team. He made it late because of college, and then he got hurt right before the playoffs. So I'd like to see a full year of those 6 guys that they have there.
Which team do you think needs to draft most to restock? I would say Boston probably, but just which team do you think really need to make an impact tonight?
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's definitely Boston. They have the most holes to fill. I would say they could benefit from, I mean, depending on where you want to play Kevin Buchanan, down at attack or at midfield like he has been the past couple of years, they can afford to take on a stud player like on attack or midfield, where most of those teams, if they take on a guy, like we were just talking about Berg, maybe a guy who's going to control the ball a lot, like Lyle Thompson, that might throw off the sort of space and sort of chemistry that other teams have going on. So Boston could definitely take on a guy like that.
Okay, now last question before I let you go. Who's your top sleeper pick of the draft? We've talked about Akeem Lackey, we've talked about Schoonmaker, we've talked about a few other guys. So who do you think is going to be the sleeper who's going to go before people expect?
I'm not sure he'll go before people would expect, but I think he'll make a big impact wherever he goes. Ryan Izzo out of UMass, he's a short stick D mid, just great athlete, and I've been sort of talking about him ever since draft talk started, and he's just not really getting mentioned. I know Jack Neer and Will Haas are getting their due credit, but Ryan Izzo was also an honorable mention All-American last year, and if healthy, he's one of the best short stick middies in college.
Well, Joe, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the draft. A lot of fun. Thanks so much for joining our broadcast here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, it's Joe Keegan from Laxter, former in Lax columnist as well. You can still read his work on the website. You're going to get a search bar back very soon after some complaints, so you'll be able to find the stuff there. But just want to talk a little bit more about sleeper picks. It seems like every year you see a new guy emerge. I mean, don't forget Jeremy Boltis with a Mr. Irrelevant. You have a few other guys. I believe John Rannigan was a 6th or 7th round pick a couple years ago. So MLL Commissioner David Gross tweeted about this either earlier today or late yesterday about late round picks and their impact. So who do you see what late round pick could be an impact?
Well, I mean, I'll go back to what I said earlier as far as from the local, when I look at, some of the local talent, Saputo and, Ryan Duncan, I think, they're obviously going to be later round picks. And I can, like I said, I can see them being, being a force, I'll say, for whoever takes them. I mean, you can look at the Rattler lineup. Fitting well there. As far as face-off goes, I mean, can you ever have a good enough face-off person? I mean, Chesapeake is pretty well set. But could they use? Could they upgrade there? They would have an issue on and off.
One thing about Chesapeake that's interesting is they always just seem so stacked that they can just take the top player available to them out of their position. But last year they're coming off of a very poor year. They didn't make the playoffs, coming off back-to-back championships. So what's Chesapeake going to look to do in this draft? Because I think they're going to be a lot different than last season.
They've gone back. They're still at the point where they're just going to pick up free agents. They're going to draft two, maybe one guy that can play for them. And this is maneuvering. This is depending on what the other teams draft. They'll see availability. They'll see guys on the fringe, and then they'll try and make a play for them using their draft picks for later. I don't think Coach Kyle has any interest in picking seven guys out of the draft. There's just no interest of it there for the team.
Trade all the picks for superstars out of nowhere. It's kind of Chesapeake.
Well, if you look what he did last year when the season went tanked, you could have had David Earl, who was a foundations kind of guy, who might have taken a year to develop to be their star, but they let him go. Now they're trying to just find who's the next guy who's one step away from being the star. So it'll be interesting. I mean, their picks are going to be face-off midfield loaded, and just hope for the best. But they definitely need a third attacker. That is a gaping hole because Matt McCready cannot play that position.
I think it's a shoe-in they take Charlie Rapha at some point. I think that pick happened. But one thing with Chesapeake, too, they talk about it. It did kind of seem like they were tanking for a while, and then they went and traded for Kevin Crawley. So it's kind of confusing exactly what they want to do, but knowing Coach Cottle and the approach that system has, they'll be back on top in no time.
And that's a system. So Crawley is usually more of like an open player. He finds his opportunity, he goes to the goal. Cottle, I've seen his practices. He goes through, you have to play the system in order for it to work. That's why Ben Rubior actually gets the goals that he does. He can't get to the cage, but he's opportunistic. He finds the holes in the defense. So he's just going to be looking for players that are third, fourth, maybe even fifth year players to come in and spend a year or two to keep the team in the top four.
Anyone else want to hit on Chesapeake before I move to another topic?
Yeah, I mean, real quick, like, you know, Brian was saying with Chesapeake, they picked up Crowley with a handful of games left. He's obviously going to add offense to it. The way he plays the game and the way he shoots is similar to the indoor. You give him open space, you leave his hands open, he can put the ball in from wherever he's at. But they do need to build around him and the other players. And, you know, like I said, Cottle's not going to go after seven players. He may go, he'll go after the best available player, package him with somebody, maybe grab somebody from another team.
I think would be is that I think they should go with either a defenseman or even a goalie. I mean, their defense is, like, name-wise, like, very good. But a lot of those guys are older. And shockingly, the only guy that they've kept from a draft is Bernhardt, Jesse Bernhardt. He's been their only, like, impact guy that they've actually drafted and kept. I think, I mean, when I talked to him last week, he said that there's a lot of depth throughout this draft. There's no stars, and I think we've all said that. There's no real star outside of Lyle Thompson. He's, like, the number one guy. Then everyone else kind of falls into that second tier, a big second tier. So I think a lot of these picks are going to be guys who are going to be available because of the NLL, which is stressed. And which is obviously big on their roster because they got six or seven guys who could be there, who could not be there as the season starts. But they really need help defensively. I mean, Kip Turner was hurt last year. They do have Tyler Fiorito, who is good. But, I mean, Kip Turner was a rock during their championship run. So,
Brendan, anything on Chesapeake?
Me and Andrew and Rocco pretty much said it all. Just, you know, there really isn't any big stars outside Lyle Thompson. I've been repeated multiple times. It's really hard to decide, you know, what Chesapeake's going to do besides pick the next best player in a sense.
One thing we've all kind of been talking about in our group Facebook chat has been where Major League Lacrosse going to expand. First of all, they have some sort of big announcement tonight, which I don't think any of us know what it is, but I've been Twitter predicting it's going to be expansion, which it probably won't be.
They're actually drafting Brendan is Mr. Relevant. So.
Congrats, Brendan.
Congrats, Brendan.
So.
It's now.
Yeah, Brendan Saw, not Chamberlain. He's passing.
You're the second to last pick, Chamberlain.
I thought I was Mr. Irrelevant because my statistics can't be found anywhere.
That's why they're not picking.
I've always said once I graduate college and putting my name in MLL draft, so you can watch for that too. But we don't know what the announcement really is going to be. I've been talking to a few people on Twitter. We're just predicting expansion, so it got us on Facebook to start talking a little bit about if they were going to expand to maybe four more markets, where would it be? Now, I like Atlanta, Dallas, Seattle, and then I like places like either Minnesota or Los Angeles. So I think they need more of a West Coast presence. I don't know how much they want to go back to California, because Commissioner David Gross, he's told me several times, I know they don't really want to go back to California. So what kind of location? I think Oregon seems like a perfect fit for the West Coast guys, either Oregon or Seattle. I think they've been targeting Dallas. I think they're going to be in Atlanta very soon. They basically have said that. And then Minnesota is just kind of, I think, would be an interesting market to explore. So, and Philadelphia, too, of course, because there's been a little bit of talk about them. And now they don't have a pro team anywhere, so they could use a team back again. I say Rocco Grimace is next to me. So anyone have any talk about where could we see expansion to next, either in the next couple of years or at any point?
Well, my thoughts, and I was talking to Andrew about this, you know, throughout a couple months, expand back to Philly, come back to Philly, go to New Jersey, one of those two areas, get the tri-state area back. But to tell you the truth, the fans in the championship game, they, you know, down in Atlanta, it was phenomenal. You know, well, they had over how many, like, 7,000
total for the weekend? Or for,
there was only one game there.
Anyway, that's back to Atlanta. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Atlanta for a couple of them. Everything's starting to really boom down south. So I'd be surprised to see another Southern team pop up.
Isn't it true that if Philadelphia gets a team back, that they're the reigning champs?
Oh, yeah.
Since they did, they won the championship and then became defunct.
Technically, yeah. That would be fascinating.
Hey, let's call Brian Dougherty real quick. Call Doc.
You know, on the phone with Chestnut Hill.
The anticipated announcement could be, championship weekend, as I was talking with Brian. The speculation of going to an NFL city.
Gillette?
I would say Gillette. You know what? That whole Boston cornering the market, All-Star Game, league headquarters, all these other things. If this league's going to expand, they have to get league office in New York City.
I like it in Boston. Just fine.
Yeah, well, that's great, but we don't like you.
#deflategate.
You know, good thing about lacrosse, Marissa, is that you can't take the air out of the ball, so you won't get a competitive advantage.
You should see my tweet today. I tweeted lacrosse ball today.
You know, just from Brian and I having a side conversation here, one of the things you have to look at is this league is going to expand to other markets. You're going to need a Western front to legitimize the league. I think the league can go back to Los Angeles if it's in the right arena, stadium, and I like Oregon as a pick with a lot of players coming from the Pacific Northwest. I think Oregon could be a great fit for the league.
Yeah, and we don't need to talk about Deflategate anymore. Just saying on Twitter, no one needs to tweet to me.
Hot air, cold air, a lot of things there.
Just got to make sure the lacrosse balls are all the same weight.
Speaking of lacrosse balls, I don't know if anyone noticed the Twitter announcement today from Dave Cottle, Joe Spillane, a few other guys. Looks like the grippy balls are back. So I don't know if anyone has any thoughts.
Yeah, that's a big announcement. I mean, that's a big announcement.
I hope that's what it is. We're
spending the entire sports cycle, the entire week about playing balls, so we might as well just talk about having grippy balls in the game. That's what we want to do.
Last season, Brenda, you want to go?
Hey, bring back the grippy balls, all I got to say.
They're going to. At one point last year, Dave Cottle had me start # grippy ball, and he messaged me to do this, so, and I did a whole article on grippy balls, and I did a 2,000-word post about how they affect two-point shots. So I like having it back. I brought with me, I got a ball at an MLL game last year, Rattlers and Cannons, and I have the smooth ball, and then I have a grippy ball from before. So I remember the comparison, it seemed like a big difference. So it's good, grippy ball is back.
Absolutely.
So just a side announcement, and if that actually is the major announcement, I really hope it is, because because I can just imagine fans buzzing with excitement over Grippy Ball. Oh, it was hashtag Grippy Ball Gate. That's what the hashtag was. It was beautiful. So at some point we're going to get some GMs and coaches on here. It's still kind of empty.
You know, obviously they're late coming to the crowd. Maybe they're working on Master Trade.
Yeah, maybe. I hope they're the trade. He will ruin all the mock drafts. I didn't do a mock draft this year. I just did a ranking, so I'm mad because when I did my NLL mock draft, Rochester or Vancouver traded a second overall pick to Rochester for Johnny Olive, and it killed my mock draft, so no mock draft this year. So everyone who did do one is revenge on them now.
All right, Mel Kiper, relax.
Yeah.
Don't cry me a river. Tot.
So I've seen
a punter with your first pick.
Yeah. Someone's going to do that someday. It's going to be amazing. So since we didn't do a real mock draft, we can do a mock first round draft right now. If anyone wants to talk about pick by pick, anyone have the draft list up anywhere so we can go off of it? Because it changes every 5 minutes.
I've got it. I'll bring it up. Florida's first pick.
Yeah, and then Charlotte's number three, and then after that, I draw a blank. So if anyone can pull up the actual draft list, we can just go pick by pick. I mean, Florida number one, it's Wyle Thompson.
Yeah.
Florida number two, if they keep the pick.
But what, number two?
Yeah, number two. They could trade.
They need so much midfield.
I would say get rid of number one, keep number two. The chances are Thompson going to Florida, I think, just aren't going to happen. So if you get one of the New York teams to take number one, they could get some pieces and maybe draft. They'll have at least three picks in the first round still.
You're talking about not drafting Thompson, one of the premier players.
Oh, no doubt.
No. You're talking about trading, not taking him number one, and basically trading that pick. Who would you trade him for, and for what?
So you have to justify trading away a player.
You could get a big bounty for him.
Right.
And they do need a lot of help.
But where would you see him going, and what would be the return? For what players?
Like in Rochester.
Well, really,
the
story is
that, would be a good
that
one.
It's...
Austin Rannigan.
It's likely going to be just a lot of picks. I mean, you can't, unfortunately in this league, you don't have player for player ever.
Right. But Florida's going to want something now.
Tangible, Rannigan, Mike Vanley.
I think someone mentioned Jordan McIntosh. I think Brendan mentioned him. I think that would be a good option.
But then you'd have to see that. I guarantee you there'll be three picks coming back and a player.
And a player, yeah.
You
would have to do that at least.
Yeah.
Because they want something to make it somewhat of an impact.
Well, what happens is if you draft him first, and everybody knows that he doesn't want to show, they're going to be lucky to get whatever they can.
Okay.
So why waste it? And then you can pick whoever you want second that you probably talk to, know will come down. And you're good.
Yeah.
So I just want to ask two questions. First of all, does anyone know what the deal is with Ben McIntosh? Is he actually ever going to play MLL? And second, I'm just looking at a list of all Denver Pioneers prospects. Are they just all going to go to the Outlaws? That's probably just what's going to happen. Adamsonburg.
Well,
I mean, Ryan LaPlante.
Well, that's what happens with location.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that they want to do necessarily. I'm sure it's not bad.
If you look at the guys that are from Toronto area, they'll go to New York, Boston. They'll stay around. But
Rochester.
If it's anybody that's from Western Canada or Denver, they're not coming.
They're going to Denver.
Yeah, they're staying in Denver.
That's the problem with Ben McIntosh, I think, right now, too. I think the Bayhawks wanted him to play. They drafted him thinking he was going to, but nothing so far. So with Denver, from what I've been reading and what I've heard, Ryan LaPlante's probably going there. I know they just traded for Dylan Ward, who played for the Colorado Mammoth, so it makes sense. Here's a good one for you. Curtis Dixon was traded from Denver to Florida. As far as I know, he learned about to trade on Twitter. So there's your magic of lacrosse going on right there. So Curtis Dixon, I don't know if he's going to play in Florida or not, but Denver gives him up. They get Dylan Ward. It makes sense probably for them to take a guy like LaPlante because he's the Denver goalie, but does he play? Do they carry him on a practice roster? What happens if they go that route?
With the way Jesse Schwartz didn't play in the FIL games, in the FIL games, my eyes a little bit different.
and the ammo, obviously. The way Justin Schwartzman played, I think they take the plan, and because Schwartzman is now, in a sense, getting older, I think they start molding the plan to take over. You know, they do have Dylan Ward, who is absolutely phenomenal, and won in Canada the World Championship. So with him, you know, he would definitely be a backup, if not starter, depending on the Schwartzman. You know, when he comes out of that net, he's one of the scariest goalies.
Oh, yeah.
He lets up a lot of goals doing that.
He's scary in general. Goal. After all the games, I've seen him in Boston a couple times. He just starts yelling, kind of not an interviewable guy after games a lot of the time. So, but he's fun. We get to video of him, so it's fun.
Yeah, but they've got good depth there. I mean, you look at guys like Brian Feeney, Johnny Rodriguez. Rodriguez was a stud. It's all very, it's like 2-3-time All-American, first team All-American there. Brian Feeney was a stud at Penn. So they have depth. I mean, like, technically they could go goalie, but it's really not a big deal, especially with Schwartzman and all those guys backing him up. I mean, I tried to draft a defenseman more so to replace Lee Zink, who retired.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to replace him with one guy, obviously. It's the same thing with Vrabel and the Buchanans, but if you get a couple guys in there, and there's, like we've all said, there's a lot of depth in the draft, get someone. Maybe you take a flyer on Gordon Murray, who's, you know, academically ineligible, but the same thing happened last year. So
he's still the best defenseman available in the draft, probably. But I just want to hit on, how many good MLL players retired this year? It's crazy.
Like, 70.
Yeah, you have Lee Zink gone. I get a press release about Steven Berger and Ryan Boyle an hour in between each other. You're like, whoa.
Kyle Dixon.
You see a lot of good players retiring all of a sudden. And then one other thing I want to hit on, too, which is interesting, because there are a couple good goalies in the draft. We talked about LaFonde, Matt Poilon out of Lehigh, I really like. But if you look at the pro level, both indoor and outdoor, there's kind of a saturation of goalies going on. There's a lot of good goalies without a team. So what sense does it make for a lot of teams to waste a pick on a goalie when they can just go to the player pool and sign someone decent with league experience as a backup? So is this something, it's an interesting phenomenon, maybe because there's not as many teams, but what's the situation there with goalies?
I mean, one thing you also got to think of is, you know, a lot of the goalies are coaches now in the collegiate level. I mean, you saw the trade where Gittleman went off to Boston, and he's a Harvard coach. And you've got Turner is at Brown, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Kip Turner's at Brown.
Turner's at Brown. You know? So you got to think about it that way, too. There's a lot of goalies, you know, may not be available on weekends due to college commitment.
A lot of those goalies that come out after their senior year, they sit for a year. Like Runkle from Loyola, he sat. The only reason he played is for the injury depletion from the Bayhawks. But he's obviously a capable goalie. Pierce Bassett, he wouldn't have played either. Now, 1 year later, he's the man in charge. So I would look at last year's draft to see who was played, and then you would likely see who's going to be the next guys in the league. The guys who will be drafted this year will be third goalies, maybe backups if they're lucky.
Michael's good. People don't know. He played indoor in the Baltimore League this year, too. And we're doing their game broadcast tomorrow, so we'll mention him. But,
Let's also look at the economics of this league, is that it's easier to have a rookie goaltender from the salary scale than having a player that may have played one or two seasons in a league. You know, it's easier to draft a guy to, you know, be your backup and then groom him to be your starter. And year two, year three, you look at some of the Barrett goalies in this league, they didn't get the keys to the goaltending nets until after their first or second year. It's a very difficult league. The competition is very high, and goaltending is definitely a position where you have to be groomed in practice and maybe be on practice squad on some teams to break a roster. You know, the top eight goalies in the world don't all have starting jobs in this league.
One thing Andrew just hit on that I wanted to think about a little bit, Adam Gittleman going to Boston now. Jordan Burke struggled a little bit last year. Does Gittleman get a considerable amount of playing time with your short leash for Burke? What happens there?
I mean, Perk hasn't played well. 2 years ago, he was kind of the lame duck on that team, at least in my opinion, which I don't know, take for what it's worth. I didn't think he played well. He didn't play well last year, or not as well, but their defense had improved. They almost made the playoffs outside of a Paul Rabel foot injury. I mean, he's definitely going to challenge. There's no doubt about that. And it would not shock me in the least bit if he does take over. Gittleman was the main reason why Charlotte made that big run in 2 years ago when we went to a game. He played lights out, small, good goalie. So.
He's quick, too. I mean, the other thing also I think of is I go back to, you know, his payment to Harvard. Harvard's gotten better through over the years.
Yeah.
You know, offensively, defensively, even at goaltending, he's gotten way better.
Jake Gambitsky is in the draft, too.
Yeah, exactly. So I would be surprised how he was a low final so that's the other thing. Also, you know, you've got Austin Powers, who's waiting. You know, who's waiting for his chance to really shine. But we're gonna go read our interview real quick.
Okay.
No, just
Brendan.
No, go ahead.
You want to do an intro, Brendan?
You want to do the intro?
Coach Sudan here from the Rochester Rattlers, and he's going to talk about the draft. And obviously, you know, you have two first-round picks, I believe, Coach. And tell us a little bit about your thought process going into tonight's draft.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I think this is one of the more exciting times of the year where, you know, we get to, you know, look at the college ranks and take a look at see who will translate into the MLL. And, we do have a couple first round picks, and the way we do things, you know, it started February last year watching game films, and it's pretty nice that there's so many collegiate games on TV now that we got to see a lot of guys play, and that helps the process out a lot. And we do a lot of digging with the college coaches. You know, I think just with any of the other teams in the league, we just do a needs assessment, and then we rank our guys based on our needs, and typically we'll go best available. But in the last few years, we've found some really talent, really good talent deep in the draft, like LoCascio last year in the fifth round, Dave Lawson the year before in the fifth round, you know, Cochran last year in the seventh round. And so, you know, it's just when you fill your needs, you can take chances on guys, and we've had guys that really worked out for us. And yeah, we're excited. We're excited to get another crop of young Rattlers in, and see how the season goes. But, you know, this is the first part of the process, and then it's kind of nice being able to watch them through the college season and see how they develop during their senior year.
In last year, you guys made it to the finals with such a young roster. You have Jordan Wolf, Miles Thompson, and Mark Cochran kind of leading the way, and then that defense with Mike Manley, John Rannigan playing so well, and Rannigan was a late round pick too. But it really seems like if you saw Ohio play well last year too with their offense, it really is becoming a young man's league. So with that being said, you can't really overstate the importance of a draft.
No, I think the draft is critical, and I think, you know, looking at our roster this year compared to what we had going into last year, I think the draft is super important for us last year, and we were able to utilize a lot of those guys. We got a few key areas that we really need help in, and we're going to try to address those in the first round there. But like I said, it's exciting. Those guys worked out great last year, and we're just trying to uncover as much talent as we can early and late.
One thing that I think is very interesting about this draft is you see a lot of Canadian indoor players, guys like Westberg, Chad Tutton, Jesse King, and guys who should be very high first-round picks, or at the very least first-round picks, early second-rounders. Do you think because MLL season is starting earlier than usual this year, NLL season runs late, your Canadian summer ball, do you think some of these guys might drop further than expected because of that factor?
Yeah, I would say that they're all going to drop farther than they should. How far is yet to be seen, but, you know, we see it with finance guys that have jobs coming out of college that guys stay away from. I mean, that's why we got LoCascio. That's, you know, one of the reasons that we ended up getting Lawson. So it's kind of with only 8 teams in the league, there's so much talent that you can only, you know, you can only address so much in the draft. But like I said, we're deeper than we've been in the last few years, and I think that you know, our first two picks are really important for us.
Last question for me. I don't know if anyone else has any after, but are you able to tell us any specific players you might be targeting or looking at?
No.
Yeah, usually that's the answer, but I always try. Rocco, you got any questions?
Well, no, Coach. I spoke to you last year and when from to the semifinals to the finals, and Miles Thompson just seems to be, as he is now in the NLL, the real deal. What do you see for him coming up this season, and like, are you looking to build, obviously build around him, but to get some more attackmen around him to free him up a little bit more?
I think the Miles was in a tough position last year with Kevin Lavelle. He played a lot the same position, and Miles had kind of taken on the chin, and he ran a lot of midfield for us. And you know, anytime we had him in the game, he did very, very well. So we're looking for big things out of him this year, to be honest with you. I think as good as Jordan Wolf is as a Dodger, I think he's as good of a playmaker. So, you know, you look at the score sheet at the end of the game, and Jordan Wolf has, you know, even points, and you didn't really notice the assist. And I think that's where Miles is really going to have a great year for us.
Any more questions for you?
That's what was on my mind. Okay. I wanted to know about was Miles, was the way he ran.
Yeah.
Like Coach said, you know, with Jordan Wolf was kind of, yeah, his play was totally different than what it was up here.
Well, I'm just going to end off on, I went to one game last year with the Rattlers at Boston and was just really impressed with how physical you guys played, with style of play that I think what got you to the championship. So best of luck this season, best of luck in the draft.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Coach Tim Sudan from the Rochester Rattlers joining us here on MLL Free Draft Live on the Lacrosse Radio Network. Thanks to Tim. Rochester is an interesting team because, like we just talked about with them, they're a fast team, they're a physical team, they're a young team, and I think that's really, I mean, Ohio kind of emulates them in a way, I think, too. Maybe they're almost like Rochester's mini-me in a sense, and Rochester beat them in the playoffs, which I think was such an entertaining game to watch, too. So I think Rochester really is kind of built as one of the way future MLL is going to look.
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting, you know, the way certain teams came up last year, and you know, Chesapeake being down at the bottom, and yeah, who made the playoffs, who didn't. This draft is really going to tell a lot. Who gets picked? Who's building on their future? We mentioned about Chesapeake, what they do as far as they're going to go for the best players and really go for the free agents. It's like I said, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting year. Can Rochester continue to do what they do? Can Denver repeat again? We just have to wait and see. And the draft will get underway in just over a half hour.
Technically, we're supposed to go off in a couple minutes. We're going to stay on for as long as we can because we have Coach Cottle coming on the show now. We have Coach Dave Cottle from the Chesapeake Bayhawks.
How you doing, Coach?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, first question I ask everyone, just because I can, who are you going to pick?
Great question. I'm not sure. The great thing about picking ninth is you don't know who you're going to pick because you don't know who's going to be picked before you. So, we think there's some really good players, and we're interested to see who falls to us at ninth.
One thing I was talking to Coach Tim Sudan about that I find interesting, want to get your thoughts on, there's a lot of Canadian box players in this draft. A lot of guys like maybe Jesse King or Chad Tutton that are going to fall maybe to the third or fourth round, who should be number two or number three overall picks in a perfect world. Having a late pick, do you guys think you could take advantage of something like that?
Well, I think if you look at our draft over the years, there's been a lot of really good players taken in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round, but it's not only because of box, it's because you don't get to watch them play their senior year. So this draft has a lot more flexibility, if you would, and I'm not sure how it's going to play out. Guys are going to decide how important box players are to them, if they want to get value now or they want to get value later.
One thing I always loved to watch these last couple of years when you were winning the championships. It seems like any draft, this one or a supplemental draft, you guys just take the best player on the board because you always don't have many holes. Last year, you guys struggled a little bit. Yeah. Was that a different approach? Are you trying to fill any certain needs this year?
Well, that's a good question. I would think that we're going to take the best player at 9, and then we're going to, after 9, we'll probably plug holes if we have them. We had a lot of injuries. We had 9 guys in the USA Canadian game. You know, we think we get everybody back. We have a little less injuries. We're going to be okay. We don't need that much.
One advantage you guys always have, I like to talk about, is being in Chesapeake, being in the Baltimore area. You guys can get a lot. You can take a lot of local players compared to some places like Denver. They're basically, they get the Denver guys and the Western Canadian players. We were talking earlier how, yeah, all the Denver players are going to Denver, basically. But you guys, you got Loyola right there. You got John Hopkins. You got Maryland. Is that an advantage you guys consider?
It is. This year, though, if you look at it, geography-wise, it doesn't really play into our hand. There are very few good Baltimore players that are going to be available for us to draft. So this is a, I think this is one draft that geography doesn't really, isn't an advantage to being in Chesapeake.
One thing I want to ask, just because all week on social media, I keep seeing MLL saying big announcement at 8:30. Do you know what it is and can you tell us?
I don't know.
We've been making predictions. We've been saying it's our guys getting drafted, so we're having a lot of fun with that. Can't wait to see what it is. But just last question here. What's your overall approach going into next year? You guys have had some trades already. You guys, some free agent signing, supplemental draft. Seems like you guys always get some solid players out of there. You have some good picks tonight. What's the overall approach in this offseason? Because it's kind of a different position for you guys to be in coming off of a season you didn't make the playoffs.
Well, I think we lost sight of the two things that that are important, is the time and commitment. You know, we were spread thin with the USA games, we were spread thin with the World games, we were spread thin with a little bit of injuries, and we've got to get our players back to committing and putting the time into being a big ball. That's the first step. And Matt Danowski is a good piece that we added. We didn't have to give up anybody from our core. So I think we got enough talent on this team, and I think we'll have a much better season this year.
Well, we were all talking earlier. We have no doubt the Bayhawks are going to be back in it very soon. So thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate the time. Good luck in the draft tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Coach Dave Caudill from Chesapeake Bayhawks just joining us on the show. At some point, I think the league is going to make us go off air. So we're going to try to stay on as long as we're allowed to.
I was talking to Coach Huntley over there. Dave Huntley is back with the Bayhawks.
Very nice.
Yeah, I saw him while Coach Cottle was over here. I asked Coach Huntley to come over. He said he would come over since he was done making his rounds. Slowly but surely, I don't know what to be able to get out of Coach Huntley.
Yeah. Well, we're getting a couple more interviews going on now, so welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Chamber, you got anything? Start with any questions or anything?
Barry had a great season last year. We predicted the machine here in the playoffs. Next 2015 season. Obviously, the next step for this franchise is to make it to championship weekend. And Bear, what's your outlook for this draft coming up?
I mean, for us, we felt like this is probably the most balanced roster that we've ever had. I mean, we from head to toe, I think our 40-man roster is great. So us sitting in the fourth round with our first draft pick in the fourth round, we really feel like we're at the best available player position. And, so we feel pretty good about it. I mean, we traded away our first three picks for great guys. So, that's all you can ask for.
You guys are coming off of a season. We were just talking to Rochester a little bit, and they remind me of Ohio a lot in a way, of a lot of young and fast players. It seems like ML really is a young man's game now, and you have so many former first-round picks, former top picks. You have Tom Schreiber, you have Peter Baum coming back, you have Logan Schuss. So with that in mind, what kind of needs are you trying to fill in this year's draft? Because you already have a very young roster.
Yeah, I think and that goes back to why we felt like we could trade away some of those first early picks is because we are young, and we need to solidify defense at a higher level, and that's what we were able to do. Again, for us, it's just a matter of best available guy that could come in and potentially help us, become a better team.
I think Brian Davies, you have a question?
Yeah, Coach, it's good to see you. Just wanted to ask you, like, a guy with potential like a Jimmy Daly, that I know you picked up after the supplemental draft, what kind of impact do you think guys not on that bubble of the top 10, top 15, since where your picks are going to impact your team this year?
For us, we felt like that training camp just needed to be more competitive. We felt like we had a great training camp last year, but we looked at ways that we can even improve it more, and just put more challenges, push guys to be, play better. And Jimmy Daly is just one of those guys that we think's a competitor. You know, the guy plays a little chip on his shoulder. He's quick. He brings some dynamics to the table that we like, and love to have him in camp. You know, but we have a lot of guys like that. You know, this year that I think people can underestimate the value of a training camp. You know, we want to make sure that when guys show up, it's a competitive environment.
Brian, do you have another question?
Oh, no, thanks.
All right, cool. So one question I have is, you've seen a lot this week. I think the commissioner actually tweeted about how a lot of top players going in late rounds, having a pick going, you don't pick until the fourth round and you have six picks after that. Does that encourage you a bit to see the history of late round picks?
Yeah, for us, 24, I think 24 guys in our on our camp roster are fourth rounder later. So you figure, I think we came up with some crazy stat, like 12% of our roster was chosen in the fourth or fifth round in the last 3 years. I mean, that's quite a bit, you know, just telling us that there's quality players. You just got to pick right. You got too smart and, low risk, like guys that you know can come in and help you out. That's why we feel best available. With our roster being pretty balanced, it's going to be the best thing for us.
12%, that's a crazy number. That has to make you feel pretty encouraged.
Yeah, for sure.
And you traded for Brian Caraluna this offseason as part of that three-way crazy trade that went on. So just talk about what he's going to bring to that roster. You gave up Chad Wiedmeyer for him, too.
Yeah, Chad's a dynamic player. We felt like we had some defensemen that were all pretty similar in ability, so we had to make some decisions to bring in something a little different, and BK, can play both, pull and close defense, and three-time All-Star for a reason. He's great, and not only that, but he's not guarding one of our guys, so it's like a plus for us, and we're looking forward to it.
Last question now before I let you go. Since you're picking so late, are you allowed to tell us which players you're targeting?
I mean, honestly, we have no idea. 26 guys that are chosen before it gets to us could be one of a million different scenarios. So we've kind of kept our options wide open. We kind of targeted a pool of guys that we feel could slip through to that, and then we'll play it by ear by then. I wish I had better info, but 26 picks before us is a lot of picks.
We just always like to ask it, kind of a tradition. So thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Best of luck in the draft.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
Bear Davis, head coach of the Ohio Machine, joining us here on MLL Pre-Draft Live. And now Chambo, he's bringing over even more people. So we're really loaded up tonight on the show. So welcome
Mike
to
Serino.
The show. Mike Serino, Charlotte Hounds head coach. And I want to talk right away about some of the trades you guys have made. But Mike's right here. I'm going to flip it over to you in a second. We have to do the external mic type of thing, the way we set up. But talk about, you traded Otto Vindelman, you traded Matt Danowski. What's kind of the approach to Hounds this offseason?
Last year we had a very deep draft, and we got a lot of young guys in the lineup. Adam was a tremendous goalie for us 3 years, got us to the championship game. Adam's up at Harvard now. It's a little easier for him to fit in with the Cannons. In some ways, it's a reward for all the hard work in what he did for the Hounds. And also, Pierce Bassett had a tremendous season for us last year. Actually, if you look at the stats, he's the leading save percentage guy in the MLL. Limited numbers, but he's a stopper. He's a stopper. So we're excited about him in there. Matt Danowski, tremendous talent. It was an opportunity to work with Chesapeake. Allow us to kind of balance our lineup a little bit. Last year, a heavy, heavy right-handed team for us. We picked up Garrett Thole. We picked up Terry Kiminer in the offseason. That's going to give us size, length in the midfield, and left-handed players.
And one thing you brought up with Pierce Bassett that made me think, earlier we were talking about how it seems like there are so many good goalies in a player pool nowadays. Drafting goalies almost seems redundant at times. Do you agree with that, and you think teams generally agree with that?
Very good point. You really don't see a goalie go before the third round. And if you do see him, it ends up a little bit like quarterbacks in the NFL, like you take on a project guy to see if it's going to work. A lot of times, it's the volume of shooting that makes the difference. These guys go from where they had to make 15 saves in a game, so they have to make 15 saves in a half. process. So it helps if they're on a roster for a little while, if they're in an MLO camp, if they're a backup, you kind of learn their way around the league before you move up. I think some of the long-standing goalies in the league didn't splash in their first year and had kind of apprentices on roster. Adam was a good example. He was at Denver, he came in as our second goalie for a little while, and then he was ready for the rigors of the MLO.
And one thing I was talking earlier to Dave Cottle about, actually, with their geographic advantage being Chesapeake team with all the Maryland teams around him. You guys have North Carolina and Duke right here. Do you look at those guys first with that geographical advantage?
Yes, we use Maryland down, basically. All the ACC teams give us a wonderful pecking order because there's a lot of guys from the Central Atlantic region right in there. But there's also the marketing base that goes on during the year. The ACC's on television a lot, so there's that marketing balance too. And there's also that familiar area. You know, if they're down in that area, you spend time in the Carolinas, a lot of the young men are willing to relocate to Charlotte or the Raleigh-Durham area. So that really helps the team chemistry.
Now, last question here. A lot of people are making a connection with Loyola and Charlotte, linking guys to Nico Ponfrello. Any truth to that rumor, and what are you looking to at number 3 overall?
He's obviously a tremendous talent.
Sorry, microphone.
Oh, it's okay. He's a tremendous talent. But once again, where we are right now is the third spot. We'll probably go best available. And until Florida picks, and we know what their first two picks are, we're wide open. Once Florida picks, there's a number of different things on the table. Possible trades. We could trade down and let someone else get up into the third spot. We could go with a different position at third. We're really not sure who's going to be there. So Florida really controls the room right now. Once we see their first two picks, that'll kind of hinge with that.
Coach, I have one final question. You mentioned Gary Tolt. Everybody knows about his military commitment. What does it look like for him playing this summer? Obviously, he's not playing in the NLL with a military commitment, and he said his military career is coming first because he has a lot on the plate that he wants to accomplish with that. When you traded for him, you knew what you were getting into with that. What does it look like for his availability for the summer?
Well, obviously, with the military commitment, it becomes a little bit of a moving part. I mean, essentially, we're all day-to-day, certainly the military. He was in the sub-draft. We were able to get him with the first pick in the sub-draft because he was unprotected by Florida. What we're able to do is he's actually stationed in Fort Bragg, North Carolina right now. So the communication is there, and the communication has been there with him and the Army about possible recruiting type days, kind of events around our game. So I think we're going to see him for a good number of the games there. Certainly worth the risk. Excited to have someone from the military like that playing in the NLL.
Yeah, I've enjoyed watching him play at the time the Philadelphia Wings. Became really good friends with him. Enjoyed watching him play, and when I saw that he was picked up in that draft, I was keeping my fingers crossed that something would happen. I know he was down in Fort Benning doing some of his training, that he would hopefully get transferred up to Fort Bragg.
Yeah, great communication between him and the Army, and they want to showcase their best in the draft, and he's certainly one.
That's all we have. Thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck tonight.
Thank you. Good luck to you guys as well. So, head coach Mike Serrano from the Charlotte Hounds joining us there. I think our microphone fell. It might be a signal. We have to go off air soon. I don't know. Commissioner's up at a podium. So, I think we have to go off air, but Chambo just went off, so we might be trying to get a guest. I don't know. Hopefully, though, we'll wait to see if he comes over here because we're supposed to go off air.
I'll show for tomorrow.
So, one thing I want to say, because, we have one more guy coming over, according to Andrew, but I want to take a moment to say, me and Rocco, we're going to be broadcasting tomorrow night live from Ayers Pavilion in Baltimore. Baltimore Bombers, Old Knoll Squad.
Are we still good?
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to have Coach Joe Spilino on in a second, too. But I want to hype up that. You can listen in the same way as click the Listen Live button on inlacrossetrust.com on the Listen Live area over on the La Crosse Radio Network page. It's going to be me and Rocco broadcasting that game. Bunch of Old Knoll guys, bunch of former NLL players. They're playing New Jersey Leader Sharks, which is the coolest name in the history of ever. We've had Larry Fielder around here at our area. He's running the whole show. So we're going to have Coach Joe Spilino on, and that's going to wrap things up because Commissioner being at a podium, it's time to get off air. But Chambo just brought us Joe Spallina, who will be over shortly. Now, discussing the Wizards, Rocco, what kind of needs do you see from them? They've got Paul Rabil. They've really upgraded a lot.
You know what? I don't know where they're going to go. You're looking at Rabil. You're looking at Pinnell. You're looking at Siebel. You got a lot. Ned Roddy. You got a lot out there. Out for offense. I think they're going to look more towards the defensive side, try to solidify that, and hopefully, you know, do something where they can move up and really be a strong contender. But I think that was your one downside. The offense and the defense was there. They just need to strengthen both of them up, and they did that with the offense.
And Brendan, I'm going to get your thoughts on that too. At first, I really want to thank you for the flash photography during interviews. So I just wanted to mention that. But now, tell me your thoughts on the Wizards a little bit.
You're welcome for the flash photography. I tried not to flash, but you know, gotta do what you gotta do. So I apologize for that. You know, like Rocco said, you have Paul Rabil, you have Ned Karate, you have all those guys. And it's really dangerous what they have now. Max Siebel is a great midfielder. You know, he's one of the fastest guys in the game. He is in great front, unfortunately. And his shot was, if it's a shot, it's on the run. You know, you're not really going to stop the shot. Anyway, I really see them going with a lefty attack somewhere. You know, you got Rob Pinnell that can go from, is the X guy, obviously. Tom Collins is a right-handed guy. And then you got, you know, Rabil, Jojo Marasco, and, you know, Ned Karate. Ned Karate is probably become a full-time midfielder for the Wizards, you know, I'm thinking straight. Also, Gordon Malthus, you know, he was about a midfielder. And then, you know, the left-handed attacking that they're really going to need, you know, like I said earlier in the show, was Joey Sankey at UNC. Small, quick, agile, really threatening. Just one thing that his play reminds me a lot of Billy Bitter's play. You know, Billy Bitter was small, quick, agile, and unfortunately had his crucial functional issues, which is a real shame. But
he was great.
Yeah, he was amazing.
I love to watch him play.
Yeah, absolutely. He was one of the most great players to watch. But I really see Joe Sankey coming in.
Okay, we got Coach Joe Spallina joining us on the show now, live on MLL Free Draft Live here on the Lacrosse Radio Network. Coach, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we were just talking a little bit about the Lizards. First thing is, you guys traded for Paul Rabil. Right there, things kind of changed a little bit. You guys have a staff attack. You need staffed offense. Rabil, you got Ned Karate, Mark Matthews, a bunch of guys. So just talk about what your kind of your approach after that trade took place.
I think we've been able to add some depth through some different trades as well as through our supplemental draft. I think when you're able to do that, I think it allows you to come into the draft with a clear head and kind of go after the best available talent on the board. We do have a couple, you know, needs and things we'd like to fill and some quality depth, but I think we're coming in a good position. We're not drafting by need, we're drafting by the best player available. And I think when you're in those situations, that helps the organization the most.
Rocco, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. So you guys didn't make the playoffs last year, and we were just talking to a few different teams. Seems like approaches are different going into off season, you're making the playoffs or not. What are you taking into consideration when you're looking for players coming out of the draft?
Well, we did make the playoffs last year. We lost by a goal to Denver.
Brainburn.
So we're not far away. We think we're close, and we think adding like a player of Paul Rabil's stature to the quality group of guys that we have, we think we put ourselves in a position to hopefully to win the championship as opposed to, you know, to be a runner-up or get knocked out in the semis.
It's been a long day. Somehow I forgot that game from John Grant.
That's all right. I will never forget that.
Yeah, I remembered. Oh, yeah, I did watch that game. But we were talking a bit about geographical advantages to Chesapeake and Charlotte earlier. New York, you have a few geographic advantages with a few different teams, New Jersey area, tri-state area. Which schools do you really consider the most when you're looking at something like that?
I think the great thing with lacrosse is obviously Long Island, New York is a hotbed. I think that the best players in the country that play on different, you know, NCAA teams, or a lot of them are from Long Island and New York area. So, you know, we're not overcoming the obstacles that some other organizations are doing, you know, so we're generally in a good spot as far as that goes, and that's something we definitely consider, you know, obviously, you know, how available the players are.
You lost Brian Caraluna as a part of that Vrabel trade. So what are you going to kind of try to do to replace him on defense?
Well, we drafted Luke Dupree last year with the fourth overall pick. Luke is an animal. He's a long, nasty, you know, defenseman that we think adds a little bit more bite to our defense. And, you know, it's something where, you know, if Luke wasn't available, it would have been a lot tougher for us to trade Brian.
And now last question, we tried to get it out of Dave Cottle too. MRO keeps talking about some big announcement coming at 8:30. Do you have any idea what that is? Or can you tell us?
Yeah, that's way bigger than my pay grade.
We've been trying to guess all night. We have come up with nothing, but thank you so much for joining the show. We really appreciate it, and good luck tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
We got it, by the way.
Coach Joe Spolina joining us. We're going to go off. You know it's time to go off air when you start to have memory lapses in the playoff game. But no, I remember that John Grant Jr. going off the Orange uniforms playing at University of Denver Stadium. So we're going to go off air because the draft's starting in like 10 minutes, and we probably gone over our limit to begin with from our original three-seated table. But everyone, thanks so much for listening in. Use the hashtag all for lax all night. Each of us, we will be doing. And yeah, we're going to be doing an all pregame tomorrow. We're going to be doing broadcast of the Bombers and the Laser Sharks tomorrow night. That game is going to be going live around 8:55 p.m. So make sure you listen into that. And here comes Brendan with the flash photography again. So or did he? No, he turned it off this time. Nice. So we're going to go off air now. So make sure you follow us along on Twitter tonight at Lacrosse We Trust. I'm going to get a live vlog up. So make sure you go to lacrossewetrust.com for that. Live broadcast tomorrow night. Listen in. We'll be linking to that too. So goodbye, everybody.